So I want to begin with providing a little bit of a context. We talk about our purpose being transforming lives and inspiring people to make a positive difference in their world. And what that means basically is that our effort is to help you transform your life. And it's helpful to have a sense of what that effort entails. And so one way to think about it, this is Ken Wilber's approach, what he describes as integral spirituality. For us, it's a way of keeping before us a sense of where we have to apply our spiritual practice. We have to apply it in the context of waking up, awaking, activating that dimension of ourselves that is not of this world. And so we need to awaken that part of us that is spirit. We need to grow up. We need to develop those aspects of our gifts and our talents and our capacity to be unto our world the one. And we have to clean up. We have to deal with what happens when we inadvertently live in life patterns that aren't the truth of us. When we live out of a sense of not enough or inadequacy or unworthiness, we create. And what we create out of those limiting beliefs is karma. And so we have to clean that up. And then, of course, if we want to see a world that works for everybody, we have to show up and help to co-create that. So as we look at waking up, growing up, cleaning up, and showing up, and also signing up, by the way, right, Carolyn and Frida? We want to make sure that we include the five elements of transformation at Unity Spiritual Center, not want to leave those out. So no matter who is up here delivering the transformative message, it's going to have those elements. We're going to be Some aspect of our practice is going to be about waking us up, kind of shaking us loose from our focus on what's happening in the world as if that's the truth of us. And to grow up, to know that we can evolve out of any sense of not enough or any sense of victimhood, and to be able to realize that we can own our life experience no matter what has happened, because it's all grist for the millstone of our becoming or our overcoming or our welcoming something greater into our life. And finally, we can get into this sense that we can make a difference in our world. We just have to show up. We have to come from the context of who and what we've come here to be, as opposed to try to fix something that appears to be broken in our life. So no matter what our approach is, there's going to be some aspect of our spiritual practice that affects one of these four or five things, signing up included. But in spite of that, we also have to have a sense of where the practice has to be applied. What is the precise effort that's involved? Because we just can't have a kind of wishful thinking. We can't carpet bomb the universe with platitudes of help me figure this stuff out. We have to kind of work with this mind-body mechanism, because that's sort of what is our interface in this world. And so I've shared this slide before, and I'm going to spend some more time with it and explain it in more detail, because it is such a useful tool, at least for me, and I want to share why I value being able to kind of map out a kind of schematic of the circuitry of our sense of self. So this is a representation, my way of objectifying what lives in me as an unconscious dynamic of all of these different things that are happening within whatever is this self that Gary is. And so there's a part of my self system, a part of the circuitry of my beingness, how I'm creating my personal reality that lives in the context of my habits of being, my habits of doing, my habits of having, my habits of feeling, my habits of believing, my habits of perceiving, and that informs the cycle over and over and over again. And if I don't understand that those are the circuits, those are placeholders for what could be described as a psychoneurological, biochemical, developmental dimension of the physical side of ourself in this world. Of course, that's not all there is, but that dimension, that circuitry can eclipse the part of us that is not of this world. Our soul, our essence, the sense of who we are and what we've come here to accomplish, bless you, can be eclipsed by all of that. And so to be able to understand the circuitry that creates our personal reality gives us a way in which we can alter the quality of our life experience and actually take ownership of what we're having as our life experience and have some utility, have some sense of empowerment, as opposed to feel like we're a kind of a prison of our own making. We're imprisoned. Well, that is the truth in part, but the point is we're not stuck with that. So I'm wanting us to sort of see that in this circuitry, there's which is primarily not conscious. We can think about it and say, okay, I can sense there's this part of me that is habituated to being a certain way when certain things show up in my life. That's called a habit of being. And I can understand that there are certain things that trigger my automatic way of doing things. And so, for instance, if I'm judged, I can find myself going to defensiveness as what I do when someone is judging me. And so we can begin to see, oh yeah, there are habits. There are habits of who I become when certain things happen. There are habits of what I do when certain things unfold. And there are habits of how I'm having my life. And so we can begin to make conscious that which is unconscious. But suffice to say that the top half has us focused on how our life looks and feels. Can you see how that we're paying attention always? Some part of us is doing that. And the bottom half is kind of invisible to us. It's sort of what's unconscious and what yet supports the outer expression of all those habits of being, doing, and having. And so if we understand this circuitry, then we're better able to understand what we have to do to address how to improve our life or how to change or transform our life. We have to intervene on this level of this circuitry because it's unconscious. And when we make it conscious, then we can work with this. And I'm wanting to share how we can work with this as we look at the four stages of spiritual awakening. And so if we can take into consideration that there are actual logical steps that we can take working with ourself to unlayer what has been superimposed upon us that is a veil to who and what we've come here to be, we can do that work. And I'm going to share a video clip from Michael Beckwith, who is a spiritual leader and founder of Agape Spirit International Spiritual Center. And he shares this four-step process that he calls the four stages of spiritual awakening. And I'm going to do a series on these four stages. And every time I talk, in the next four or five talks, I'm going to share the same video. So we get trained. We're going to train our attention awareness to think a certain way about our approach to how we're going to be in practice with whatever's showing up that looks or feels against us, so that we have a systematic way of understanding how we can be with whatever we're having and not feel diminished by it, that we can actually use it to help us evolve and unfold. So here we go.
Many years ago, I came up with a model of stages of spiritual growth, development, and unfoldment that we could have a wonderful conversation about what that looks like. What came to me, through me at that time, was the four stages: to me, by me, through me, and as me. The first stage, something happening to me, I'm a victim. I live believing that something outside of me determines my destiny, my happiness, my success, my well-being. Stage two, by me, is the stage in which we learn to manifest. We actually use our mind, our conversation, spiritual practices, and we begin to use spiritual principles to manifest the kind of life that we can imagine. It's the manifester stage. Stage three, through me. It means I've done such rich work in stage two, that I have an inner subjective belief that life is for me, that the universe is progressive, that something wonderful is always trying to happen, and I learn to yield to it, to surrender to it, to give over to it. This is the stage in which you go into the zone at times. You have a peak experience. Something is operating through you. And then stage four is as me. The line of separation is dissolved, and I feel my oneness with all of life with no filter. Stage one is victim. Stage two is manifester. Stage three is being a channel or a place. Stage four, I'm it. No separation. So in the stage one, the victim consciousness, we feel disenfranchised from the world, disenfranchised from opportunities. We disenfranchised for what we've inherited from the universal presence. We're separated, we're isolated, we're alone. In stage two, we use what is often called mind power in the right use of our imagination, creative visualization, high, wonderful conversations, keeping our attention high to create a vibrational match of that which we would want to manifest. It's very masculine. I am using the laws. I am directing my attention. I'm making something happen. Stage three, it's more feminine. I'm yielding. I'm surrendering. I'm allowing. Because I've come to an awareness that the order that we all depend on, I don't make that order. That order already exists. I'm yielding to it. I'm surrendering to it. Stage four, the sense of separation is dissolved, and I feel totally at one with life. Stage two, I'm making something happen. Stage three, I'm making something welcome. There's a shift. There's a shift. Research has shown that when you know why something works, it even works better. For instance, we know that vitamin C is good for us. But if you actually read something about vitamin C and see the efficacy of how it works on the body temple, then when you take vitamin C, the vitamin C is enhanced throughout your body temple in terms of your immune system, etc. These four stages, when you actually study the map, you actually read about it, you actually do the practice, it enhances and expedites your spiritual growth, development, and unfoldment, because now you know why as well as what.
So this is exactly what we're wanting to accomplish, is real clarity about the map, what we're really after in terms of our journey, so that we can be very clear that the first stage, we have to complete that before we can just sufficiently move into the next stage. And so what I'm wanting us to do over this series is to look at our awakening up process as being in this stage. So life happens to me. That's the first step, where we recognize that we have aspects of our life against us. And so whether we call ourselves a victim or not, it doesn't matter. If we have a story to tell, then we're in this mode of life is happening to me. And so whenever we have a dynamic where in relationship to a moment as if it's happening to us, then our power is out there, right? But so we want to evolve out of that stage. And then the next stage is life happens by me. And we've been talking about manifesting a greater good in our life, but guess what? We can't do that very effectively if we still have pockets within ourselves that believe that someone or something is out there that's against us. And then now, after we master a sense of being able to work with principle, work with the creative process, understanding that our thoughts and our beliefs and how we're being with what we're having creates our personal reality. More about that next week with Dr. Jane. Until we understand the mechanism of what creates what's happening in our life, then we will still feel like we're subjugated to what's happening as opposed to co-creating our experience. And then we want to shift into a sense that life is happening through me. You know, being connected to this dimension of ourself that is here as an expression of soul, of spirit. And then finally, life happens as source. I am source unto my own life. I am it. And so we just can't cover all of this in this one talk, and so I'm going to break it up into bite-sized chunks. And so this week I'm beginning the conversation on life is happening to me, and so how can we evolve? How can we move and apply a spiritual practice towards moving out of this sense of any sense that there's anything out there that can eclipse my capacity to welcome into my life a greater good. So with that said, with understanding the map of what our process is, if we go back to this this map of the circuitry of our self system, then what we need to recognize is we see that there's a part of our self system that's focused on the outer. And there's a structure in our brain called the amygdala that has as its job to pay attention and to monitor over 400 billion bits of data that the brain can engage to figure out whether or not we're safe. And that part of our circuitry would rather be wrong 99% of the time than miss the one time that it failed to protect us. So guess what? We get triggered almost by any little thing, only because there's a part of us that wants us to be prepared. But you know what happens when you're triggered over any little thing? You say and do stuff that creates karma. And so that's not good, bless you. So we need to understand that we have to override this circuitry, even though we have this part of us that's ancient, that's instinctual, that has as its intention to keep us safe. It doesn't serve the greater purpose of our taking ownership of our own life and being able to determine how we're going to be with what we're having. So we can think of the upper part of this map of the circuitry of our self system as being the mechanism of how we have our life. So there's a part of our circuitry that has our life unto us a certain way, as opposed to thinking that our life is a certain way and we're just subjected to it. I'm suggesting that what our brain, our self system does, our self system just has whatever it is having as being, this is how we're having our life. It can be totally off principle, but it doesn't matter. That's the mechanism of the circuitry. It determines how we're going to have our life, how we're going to take it in, whether or not the glass is half empty or half full. That circuitry is in charge with that. The lower part of the self system, our habits of feeling and believing and perceiving, our meaning-making mechanism, the part of us that gathers evidence, is all about the why. In other words, this is all about why we are having our life the way it is unto us. So there's a part of us that has our life a certain way, and then there is the mechanism that rationalizes that. And so we're trying to understand what victimhood really is. Victimhood is really a sense of something or someone is against us, and we've created the evidence to make that the truth of us, the truth about what we're having, you see. This is something that the self system does automatically, independent of our permission. And so our conditioning is what determines the nature of our predelineation towards how we're going to have our life. And if we don't understand that this circuitry has to be addressed, then our spiritual practice won't necessarily affect what has to be addressed if we were to move the needle with respect to our transformative experience. Are you tracking me so far?
Yes.
If I was to ask you to explain this to somebody, could you do it?
No, I couldn't.
But I want you to be able to explain this to somebody. I want you to be able to say there's a part of me that has my life a certain way. I'm conditioned to have my life be against me in certain places, in certain situations. I have trained my entire being to make up a story that supports that intentionality to have my life against me under certain circumstances. And if we don't know what those circumstances are, and if we don't see the patterns, we will always make the matter with us something out there, as opposed to see the self system that is not functioning in the integrity of our essence, but is rather an artifact of the sense of separation. And that is what is running us. That is what we must free ourselves from. Okay, here we go. Let's turn this way. So, if we're going to focus on the whole dynamic. Now, oh, isn't that so cute? Where did I get that little dog? Okay, so I got to tell you that there is no dog. We're the only mammals probably on the planet that can become a victim. I mean, just think about it for a moment. When was the last time your dog, like, remembered? You know, so the point is that we have that capacity to have our life against us because we have a dimension of our self system that reflects and makes meaning, and that is different than most other sentient beings in a sense. So if we can go to a place within us where we are a victim of our life, this is what we're talking about now, okay? And so all of us, from time to time, go to a place where that's our experience. We're having someone or something be against us, okay? And so that's important to know. And it's for different people, it's different things. So for some, and I'm going to be talking about how I have created my own sense of victimization around money and around my career. And I'm going to tell that story and sort it all out through this whole series so that you can sort of see a very real life situation and the effort that Jane and I have been through to try to apply these practices, recognizing that when I'm concerned or stressed out about my career, I'm having something against me. And if I am using my situation as evidence as to why I'm not able to succeed, then I am using my situation to victimize me. You see how I am creating for myself my own kind of encapsulated no-win scenario? By virtue of creating the situation and the story to support it, to keep me locked into a belief about myself that keeps me tied to the sense that I'm not enough or the sense that I'm not okay. Whatever is behind my sense of victimization, what's up for me is that until I resolve that, then it's very difficult for me to manifest a greater good or success in my life. Can you see how that could be so in my situation? Can you see how it could be so if I'm living in the belief that there's something out there that's preventing me from experiencing a greater good in my life? Can you see that that's, when I'm doing that, I am doing unto myself this sense of victim? Can you see how that's so? Okay, now, there are some situations where we can kind of make up a story that we didn't do it to ourselves. Let's try to find at least one example. I'll come up with one. Here it goes. Okay, so that's a legitimate victim, right? Jesus on the cross. I mean, we've legitimized that. But you see, if you were to ask Jesus, you know, do you consider yourself a victim? He would say no. And he said so. He said, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." He didn't buy into the belief that his experience was against him. He saw it as an effect of the disconnect. And so when we understand that the ills of our own life and the things that we struggle with are an effect of the disconnect, whose disconnect is this? It's mine. That's where I have to start this work. I have to address it there. Okay, so I'm just waiting. There we are. So if I'm going to be able to shift out of this dynamic of being victimized by what I have created as a world where I'm having to have things happen out there in order for certain things to take place in order for me to feel okay about myself. And what we're saying is the problem is not out there. The problem is the circuitry. Right? That's what we're saying. The problem is the circuitry. It's not anything out there. So to the degree that I do not abandon my effort to try to address the reflection is and instead of, and not pay attention to the circuitry, then I'm working not with the problem, I'm working with the effect. And so as I look at the circuitry, we want to see that if there's a part of my meaning-making and part of my dynamic of self that is creating a story over why I am the way I am, then my self system keeps me encapsulated in that reality, right? And so in order for us to change the outer experience, we have to do two things. We have to be capable of changing our habits of being, doing, and having, and we have to change the story. You see, we have to do those two things in order for there to be any shift in our self system that changes the way it creates its personal reality. In order for us to have a different personal reality, we have to change the inputs to that self system. So now the effort is, how do we give up our story? Because you see, that's going to be one of the benchmarks, the kind of tests to see if we're actually moving in the right direction. And so if you think about your story of not enough, or your story of life happening to you, or your story of victimization, if you can see how that story gets told over and over and over again, maybe you're not telling somebody directly over and over and over to somebody, but that story is running in your head over and over and over again. If you're not willing to give that up, then something else is needed instead. You have a question?
I'm reminded of, I believe the author's name is Ken Burns, and he wrote a book in the 70s called How to Love Your Life in Spite of It All. And one of the ideas that I found very profound was that when you have a, quote, demand that life be different, it's very different than having a preference for a life
sure.
to go in a certain way.
Sure.
And that simply changing that demand or need to be something that you would prefer allows one, I think, to go on in a much more positive way.
Sure. That's a good point. And it goes along with, what's your name? What is your name?
My name is Catherine.
Catherine, it goes along with what we often say is that if we're to kind of presence that, like for instance, if I presence the fact that I make up stories no matter what, and if I just say, well, the story I'm making up about this is, that helps me make sure that I don't inadvertently validate something with this is the way it is by saying, well, this is how it is, as opposed to this is the story I'm making up about it. So I think that goes along right well with that. So as you think about giving up your story, so here's the challenge. You cannot give up a story of victimization until you're ready. Okay, so some experiences, especially trauma, you cannot just get over it just because you're tired of it. And so some things require of you a process that is more than just getting over it, but is about integration. It's about really kind of being in all aspects of what this story is so that you see the fullness of it so it can be totally owned. I'm talking about the repetition of our just over and over and over again holding ourselves to the same experience. We're trapped in that same feedback loop. You know what I'm talking about? And so how do we break out of that? How do we break out of the habit of sourcing our discomfort out there and therefore rationalizing how we be within ourselves in some way of contorting to be able to manage it? So I'm wrapping this thing up because this is a series and I'm wanting to do it justice. And I'm not wanting to rush through it with sharing a personal example or a personal experience and then just having it kind of gloss through. So I'm wanting to take the time it takes to understand that If we were, for instance, to change this circuitry, what might that look like? So, for instance, if I'm talking about a victimization that I'm carrying with me, where I see myself struggling to get some evidence of my worth by having something happen in my career or in my world that gives me more money or whatever it is, the symbol of giving me something that I need in order for me to feel like I'm worthy, in my effort to try to not have to go there out there, but rather to work that from the inside out rather than from the outside in, I want to share how I work with the circuitry. So the first step is that I have to map out the habits I'm wanting to correct. So what is the habit of being that underlies my sense of victimhood, my sense that my life out there is not happening the way it needs to happen for me to be okay? Well, my habit of inadequacy is one aspect of this, because that conditions the habit of my unconscious spending. And that conditions the habit of my having to have what I want to have now in this moment, because that's when I want it. And can you see how those three habits in the presence of a credit card can translate into thousands of dollars of indebtedness that could make one want to have their life need to work differently in order to manage this stuff that I don't want anybody, even myself, to notice? All right, so stay tuned for the next part of this story. That's all about the struggle now to really work this system with different behaviors and a different story, because that's what is next. We have to change the upper behaviors and change the lower story that we tell. Talk to you later. God bless you.
Thank you very much for that, Gary. The story I'm telling myself as a seeker and wayfinder is we're far more inclined to find the new territories within ourselves that we have maps to go and discover. So all of the new maps that we do have and that we can receive, it's good to take a look at those and maybe go for a wander around inside of ourselves. So thank you very much for that, Gary. And I'd like to welcome you all again. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, for we know that there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are, and wherever you are on your journey of transformation, you are welcome right here. We'd especially like to welcome anyone who is here for the first time. If this is your first time visiting with us and you are comfortable raising your hand, please do so. Our ushers have a gift packet just for you. On the outside of the packet, there is a form you can fill out to be added to our mailing list for our weekly e-news updates and quarterly newsletters. This is a great way to keep up to speed on what's happening in this great place. If you are interested, please fill it out and drop it into the love offering bag as it comes around, and you can do that instead of making a donation today. Also, after the service, you can take this packet to the barista stand to get a free beverage. You can't beat that. So you can also take it to the bookstore, get a CD of today's talk.